Hello, 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 everyone. This is Mika Ray. You are joining us, me and Rainier, for Intimate Realness. I'm sorry we had a slight delay today, but we are here. And today we are talking about, let me bring Rainier on. Today we are doing Labels Part 2. So we are so excited to continue to talk about this. Rainier, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
All righty. Sorry about the delay. I was having a few technical difficulties, but we are here. So how are you doing tonight, Rainier?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine with everything happening in the news around labels and how we identify. And even today, ironically, being Columbus Day and how people respond to Columbus Day. You know, just the label of Columbus Day versus National Indigenous Day or National Native American Day. So it's just odd how important labels or how we identify or how we show up, how important they are.
Definitely, definitely. Labels are very, very, very important in the community, even in just, like you said, in everyday life, because I've been reading a whole lot about the discontent that a lot of people have in regards to this being Columbus Day. And they're like, oh, well, how is this even possible? He discovered something that was already here. So, yeah, very important. And I'm happy that that was something that you chose to bring up. And I had a quote, and that's, actually, that's what I was using in the as the picture on the Facebook page on the invite, where it says people
yes.
are too right. People are too complicated to have simple labels, and I definitely agree with that. We are very complicated folks. We are made up of just one thing that you call us. You know, just because you are quote unquote a lesbian or you are a gay male, that's not all. That doesn't encompass you in your entirety. We have so much
right.
more than us. We have to think we're female, we're moms, we're sisters, we're nieces, we're nephews, uncles, you know, dads. We have so many other things that make up us and who we are. So.
Agreed.
Good.
And I just want to say I agree 100%. People will challenge that depending on what their base label is. But I agree that on a larger scale, we're so much more.
Right. Definitely. So how did we want to – when I created the invite for the show tonight, I put in here the information about Raven Simone. When she made her comment on the Oprah show. Did you have a chance to look at that, Rainier?
Oh, I have been following that story since it happened. So I was, you know, I was very clear on it. And I, you know, and I'm sure I want to get, you know, pulled out into the middle of the field about this. But I got what she was trying to say. And she did mm-hmm. come back with the with, I guess you could say, an afterthought, clearing up the fact that she said, I didn't say I wasn't black. I just said I wasn't African-American. I just don't want to identify as such, you know? Or, and I guess in the same context, she didn't say she, you know, she wasn't who she is because she is clearly in a relationship with a woman, but she just didn't want to identify as being gay. I know lesbian women that I'm not a lesbian, I'm just a woman that sleeps with a woman, or I'm just a woman that loves a woman, you
mm-hmm,
know, and that's
mm-hmm.
really interesting. So I was not upset at her language because I understood what she was saying. The dangerous ground that gets played, though, and I talked about this in a class once, and it came
mm-hmm.
up, is sometimes when you neglect to attach to things like your color or your sexuality, you blur the lines to where you remove yourself from the struggles. And I use that word loosely. from the challenges that it may be to be that. So, for instance, for example, just someone who may say, well, I don't see myself as black, I don't see this person as white, I see them as just human, just we're just the human race, then what will happen is you run into those conversations that will border on almost racism. They call it colorblind racism, to be exact, where they may not understand the plight of you're being African-American or you're being black, you know, because they'll be like, oh, well, I don't see your color. But there's clearly things that come with the color, just like there's clearly things that come with being LGB or T. There are things that challenges that we face in that. So when we say, well, I'm not attached to the community whatsoever, then are you really able to see the struggles or the trials or the challenges that come with that? So that's the challenge around sometimes disconnecting from a label.
Right. I definitely agree. Sometimes we get to a place where we say, okay, I don't want to be, like, just like she said, I don't want to be labeled as African-American. We lose the actual connection to, like you said, the actual struggle. And I've challenged myself on this a couple of times because my undergrad, I have a degree in sociology. So we talked a lot about the label of African-American, Black American. And for me, what I feel most comfortable with is Black American, because I honestly don't know or understand where I come from in Africa to say African American.
Okay.
But something that someone pointed out that I was reading is that, you know, the world started in Africa. That's what someone pointed out. So it's like, well, we all African American, so we might as well all call ourselves that. So I thought that was interesting too. But I think we can get into, once we get into this talk, you know, a lot of people find it hard to actually discuss it because you don't want to feel like you're a sellout, quote unquote, or that you just don't understand who you are or where you come from. But a lot of us, a lot of Black people in America don't understand where we come from. We don't know. Our last name may not even belong to our family. These are last names that were probably given to us because we were a part of the slave owners. Sometimes you take on their last name. So it's like we will have to do a lot of researching, a lot of studying to figure out where we come from so that we can get an idea of who we really are and where our roots are connected to.
Right. And just to, I shared the synopsis on my Facebook page, and I did get permission from the posters to quote their response. And someone said, you know, watch how many folks jump on her for what she stated was her own reality. No one has the right to judge her belief. And I wanted to pull that quote out because I want to bring it to the conversation that we started having last month around labels. And then we even talked about the relationships that transcend what is considered to be normal. See, like you, it is my undergrad, you know, work that I did that guides me in understanding culture, because my undergrad is in culture and communication. So, you know, I too get caught up in looking at how we respond as a body in a macro way and also in a micro way. And so it's very easy to hear people say, oh, I don't like stud for stud relationships. So I don't like femme for femme relationships, or even something as innocent as not wanting to have dialogue about bisexual matters or not wanting to have dialogue about transgender matters. It opens up this area, labels open up this area for discrimination, but then it's argued as preference, which is what we were talking about the last time we came together.
Is it
just preference, or is it deeper than that?
And, well, that is a great question, because I think this is what I think and I don't give my opinion often, but this is what I think when it comes to preference and labels, I guess. It's like you said, is it actual preference or is it an actual discrimination or in some cases a self-hate for what it is that you, who you are, and when you are attracted to a certain someone. Because, you know, I guess when I could say, when I say self-hate is when we have people who say, you know, well, I'm not dating a dark-skinned person, or I'm not going to date, you know, anybody with hair of that texture. Is that a preference or is that actual a self-hate or something that you learned that it wasn't good or right?
Right. And so having said that, I would be interested if someone was listening that I've heard some people say they were trained a certain way. Femmes, aggressives, may have been taken under someone's wing and taught a certain way. And I wanted to know, and I'd be interested if someone was listening, that as they grew up within their sexuality or as they matured within their sexuality, did they meet this moment where what they were groomed as or what they taught no longer worked for them? So, you know, I guess, for instance, an AG that was groomed up by another AG to say this is the way that we behave, an AG meaning aggressive or, you know, and or to the more far area of masculine identified, that when they got to a point that they said, you know what, I think I like another aggressive or I like another masculine identified individual, and had to kind of deprogram from what they learned inside of the label. So if someone's out there that's listening that could call in and talk about that, I would really like to know that, because I know some people that got into relationships based on what they was taught, what they were taught to be normal, and realized that that wasn't the structure that made them happy, whether it was in the bedroom, outside of the bedroom, in the kitchen. Just something about the structure or the attraction did not fit them, but that's what they did because that's what the community said they had to do.
That, you know, if we do have anyone who has something to say, please press 1 and we will bring you on. If you have a comment or a question, or if you just want to comment to what Rainier just said. And that just makes me even think about somebody posted in one of my groups and they said, you know, is being gay a preference? Like, is it something like a learned behavior, or is it something that you were born with? And it just made me think about, I think that it's a mixture of nature and nurture. You know, it's like you're born with an affinity for a certain sex. However, based on the way you're raised and what you've been taught, you may tend to go towards the opposite sex because of what you were taught. So I think that was a great point to bring up. And it looks like we do have someone, so I'm going to bring her on. Looks like it's Shonda. Hang on 1 second. 7973. 7973, you're on.
Hey, Rainier.
Hey,
Mika. Hey, I just wanted to say something, Rainier, that kind of sparked something when you said, were you groomed for one thing? I can probably honestly say that I was, in the very beginning, I was groomed to be a girl, and I was groomed to be a feminine girl because that was what my appearance, I guess, at that time warranted. So I thought that's what I was supposed to be. I was told that because I was feminine looking and I had, you know, long hair and all the things that girls have, then I was only to date aggressive women. Well, not really aggressive women, because the women at that time, and I'm speaking of around 17, 18 years old, they actually look like men. For me, it was almost just a little bit comfortable because I was just coming out. So it was easy to date women that looked like that because that meant that I wasn't real gay. You know what I mean? I wasn't fully gay in my mind because these people looked like guys. Well, as the years went on, a few short years after that, something started feeling very uncomfortable to me, and that just wasn't who I was. So I had to come, and it's a hard transition to make, especially when you're young, and this is what the seasoned people in the community are telling you you have to be, or this is your role. This is what we've given you. This has been stamped by the gay committee, and this is what it is. It's kind of hard to get out of that, and I think sometimes people just kind of go with it and never, you know, really come into who they are or what they want to be.
Mm.
So just my experience.
No, I mean, that's real. That's real, and sometimes it's easier. Like you said, for you, it just seemed like that was what it was because that's what people told you that it was supposed to be. At what point did you understand that that was completely not you?
I met a female who came, we became friends. I was attracted to her, of course, because she was a very feminine female. And I confided in her that attraction, and she thought it was completely ridiculous that all those years prior to that I had not been able to express that. So she was a little older than me, a little more mature, and just said, you can be whoever you want to be. Don't let them, you know, tell you you can't do this and you can't do that. So slowly the mask started to come off, if you will.
Okay.
And I became more comfortable in who I really was. But still, I can see the people now that I knew way back then, and they look at me now, it's like with disgust. Like, I can't believe you look like this now. Because some people just have those roles in their mind, and they have this certain place for you that they think you should be, and they won't let go of anything, won't let go of it.
Hmm.
Wow.
I think that's a good point to make because we can even bring that back to how some lesbian women who identify as masculine, they will not even do anything remotely feminine, even though they have a desire, such as have a child. And I think Renee, you put it, you said it earlier that sometimes these labels hinder us. I think you was trying to say that in a way. They hinder us from being who we really, really, truly are because we're worried about the thoughts of the community and what they're going to say and how they're going to look at us. And then we miss out on certain things in our life and now we're unhappy just because we try to fit this role of who they told us we're supposed to be.
Absolutely.
Well, I thank you, Shonda, for sharing that enlightening, just enlightening us to your journey. I mean, I'm sure that you're not the only person that came face to face with the mirror and was like, "Nah, this, no, this is not working for me. I don't know what's going on here." And luckily, you had someone who was that you were talking to that was honest enough to say to you, "Yeah, let's not do that. Be you." Be you.
Exactly.
So I thank you so much for calling in and sharing that with us and keep being you. And I'm sure after all this time, you're like, I don't know nobody else to be. I'm always be me. But,
absolutely. I don't remember that other person. I don't remember her that well. Well, kind of, but you know.
So I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Shonda. All right.
You know what's interesting? You know, my story was similar, but it was just a little bit. It was similar, but a little bit different because I started out very feminine, but just like Shonda was talking about, I knew that I had this real dominant outside, and it wasn't until one of my friends grabbed me by the collar, and I think that they were upset that I was manhandling or disrespecting other aggressors. So I think mm-hmm. that's really what it was about. I don't think it had anything to do with, you know, wanting to liberate me. I think it was just their disgust at feeling like I was masquerading and infiltrating and destroying other other aggressors.
Wow.
They were just very much like, you just really need to be yourself. Stop. Because, you know, people date by what they see. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I would end up with people that thought that they were getting, you know, one type of personality, and they ended up getting something else. And it just didn't go well. You know, in the long run, it just didn't go well. And so, you know, my friends were very much like, please just be you. And then even in being me, and allowing the masculine aspect to come out of me, it still became a point. But I was like, okay, all right, but what about the fact that I still like to wear accessories? What about the fact that I still, you know, feel soft in some ways? What about the fact that, you know, some women that I would date would say, oh, you're not masculine enough? So then I was, you know, homeless in label again because I didn't fit the model for it. So I just got to a point where I just said, listen, I'm almost 40 years old. What it is what it is. But that doesn't always happen for everyone. They kind of wander and feel confined
mm-hmm.
when they don't have to. Now, if that's who you are, that's who you are. I'm not taking that away. What I'm saying is what I'm encountering is younger people that only pick a side because they had to. Period. Don't even they say, oh, I don't know anything about this. This is just what they taught me.
Right. I think that it's quite sad that in today's world, we can't just be who we are. We don't know how to be who we are, who we were born to be. I think that we grow up and we take on a lot of thoughts, the feelings. Are you okay?
I think mm-hmm.
I hear feedback. Okay. We take on a lot of the thoughts, the feelings of other people and what they expect of us, and it puts us in a very, very, very peculiar place. And I think we end up losing who we really are. I don't know if you hear that, Renee. I don't know if that's your phone. Well, let me see if that's your phone.
I don't hear anything.
Hang on. Okay. Yeah, it sounds like that was your phone. But hopefully, no, I don't know if anyone else is hearing it or not. But
I don't hear it.
I just hear a little feedback. But go ahead.
So my other question is, how do we then not allow the limit? Because someone said on my page, you know, ladies can be so limiting. Even, regardless if you choose to identify in a specific scope or by a specific label, how do we not allow that to flow into other areas? Like, how do we not allow the label to restrict us or constrict us in, like, bedroom, household duties, just things that can create a divide within the relationship?
This is what I tell most of my couples, and I said it last show, and I'm going to say it again, that I just feel like in the LGBT community, we are at a place where we're in a very non-traditional relationship. It's just non-traditional. It's not the norm of society. So we have learned that we're supposed to be a certain way, we're supposed to act a certain way, and we're basing it on male and female norms. So for me, I say that couples need to come to an agreement where they find out what works for them. If mm-hmm. the masculine identified partner wants to cook and clean, let it be. If the feminine partner is the one that's going out and taking the trash out, cleaning up, fixing things around the house, then let it be. Or you can just try to find a way to make it a balance of, okay, sometimes I cook, sometimes you cook. We make chores. We decide what works best for us as a couple. What are you more skilled in? If you're the better cook, then just cook. You know, if you're the one that takes care of the kids better, then you take care of the kids. If you're the one that likes to work and you're the one that's the breadwinner, whether you're the masculine one or the feminine one, then you're the one that needs to just continue to just be who you are as a person, and then everything else will fall into place. It's no need to say, okay, well, this is what I want you to do. I want you to cook, clean this, and I want you to fix the house, and you know, you're going to be the man. Don't put those roles on people, because when you put those roles on people, those labels on folks, it really make it difficult for them to live up to those expectations, especially if they're mm-hmm. not skilled in it, if they don't know what to do, they don't know how to do it. I always say men were built to be a certain way. They were built to take on the brunt of the labor. That's just how society, that's just how they were made, and they're stronger. So they can do more, and they can hold more, and they can take more than a lot of us females can.
You stand on that, and I don't mean to interrupt, but I know some men now that's not strong, that's not built for it. That you look at them like what?
That's in general. In general, okay. That's what men were built for, is what I'm saying. So we cannot try to force ourselves to do the things that we have men do. There are some things that we can do, and we can do it just as well as a man, and sometimes better than a man, and that's fine. I'm just saying, if it's something that you're not skilled at, you don't know what you're doing, it's hurting you, it's painful, whatever, why not you all share the workload or find out what the other person is good at? Because they're, you know, the feminine partner may be better at building things and fixing things and changing the light bulbs and killing the bugs and all this kind of stuff, and that's fine. It shouldn't
My wife has to kill the spider. My wife has to kill the spider. I'm telling you, she has to kill the spider. I'm not killing it. It can run amok. I'm not doing it. It can have the room. I will leave the room for a spider, yes. So there's some norms that are not norms because I'm not messing with it. Mm-mm.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. So we can't say that that's the norm for us, because we're not in a normal, quote-unquote, relationship. So I just think that we have to get to a place where we feel comfortable just being who we are, and our relationships will be much happier if we could just be who we are as a person, as opposed to who that other person wants you to be, just because they're trying to fit heteronormative rules.
And I would just like to add that I can't speak to you, but I just want to make it clear, I am not saying that relationships that have heteronorm type of identifiers cannot be happy and cannot work. I'm not saying that at all. So I want to clear that up, because someone may be like, oh, what you trying to say? No, I'm not saying that, because I have been witness to to relationships that are built in that structure that have been going 20, 30 years, even more. I've seen a couple of things. I'm not challenging that. I'm speaking more for those that are struggling within the context or being held hostage and judged because they don't fit.
Right. And that's exactly what I'm standing for, because some relationships, like I said, if it works for you, it works, and that's fine, because you may meet that female, you know, that is more of a homemaker, and that's what she loves to do. that's who she is. And you may meet that masculine female who is more of a, I'm going to work every day, I want to take care of my household type person, because that's mm-hmm. who she is. So if that's who you are, be who you are. And yeah. don't try to make something fit that does not fit. And that's basically where I was going with that.
Okay. When we ended last month's show, mm-hmm. We actually ended with someone discussing the ins and outs of their sex life, because I'm trying to remember if she was bi, but we were kind of breaking down this discussion around what happens when the labels then begin to go in the bedroom. And, you know, some of the comments that were coming back were, you know, I'm all woman, or, you know, I'm woman. And I was in a group the other day, and they were having this exact same discussion, and someone responded back. They said that, I can't find the exact comment, but they said, stop saying that we're all women or we all have vaginas or whatever the dialogue was, because not everyone, even inside of that, identifies as such. There are some women that are removed from the femininity of their, or the feminine aspects of their physical existence. So I was interested in opening up that conversation around, does it change? Now, do we not say, well, at base we're all women, so we should respond as women? Or is it clearly, is that where the conversation around gender and sex, and I mean sex as far as the essence of, not necessarily the physical aspect of, is that where that comes into play?
Can you repeat your question for me? I'm sorry.
What I'm saying is, a lot of times women respond when we get into the label conversation, especially around bedroom behavior, they'll say, well, we are all women. And this person was arguing, I'm going to see if I can find the comment. They were arguing that you cannot say we're all women or we all have vaginas in response to the argument of labels. I'm going on a hunt for the comment. But, yes, they were saying that that's no longer a basis for arguing that we no longer need labels, because we're not all, we all don't see ourselves as women, and we all don't identify with our vagina, period. That's what they were
mm-hmm.
arguing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And see, now that interests me, because I would like to know where the disconnect from your vagina came from, and the disconnect from your femininity, where did all that come from? When did you stop connecting with who you are as a female? And why does that disconnect even exist in your world?
But that was the argument. Is that where the conversation of gender comes into play? Or is that a label conversation? Is that just a classification of a dom or a top or an individual? Because we're going to go into the whole LGBT spectrum, a no touch for someone who just does not prefer to have that kind of a contact. Or is that a gender argument?
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? So that's what the conversation erupted into.
Okay. I understand what you're saying, because I have seen a case where, well, I know a few people, and where they're in heterosexual relationships, and they don't want to be pleased orally in any kind of way, a female.
Okay.
So I guess I would say, is it a preference? Does it have more to do with preference than it actually does with labels or roles or, like you said, gender? What does it have to do with? So that's why I would like to know from an individual point of view, where does that come from that particular, from those particular people who feel that way? Because I know I've heard of and I've known a few people in lesbian relationships who say the same thing. I don't want to be touched at all. I don't even want to look at it. I don't even want to be reminded that that part of me even exists. And I was, when the one person told me this, I questioned her, and I was like, okay, well, have you been, was it some type of sexual assault that, you know, happened to you? What was it? And she was like, no, nothing happened to me as a kid. I just don't want to be touched.
And
then I've had a few people, I've had actually quite a few masculine identified people tell me that they don't want to be touched that way because they have never felt pleasure. The people that have done it to them, they weren't pleased by it, so they just rather not do it at all.
Well, you know, not to be, not to step too far to the left, I will say that a long experience can alter a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I'm saying,
if you put the wrong person doing the right thing in the wrong way, it can cause you to change entire permissible sheet. It can.
Yeah, I agree. I wonder if we have anybody, do we have anyone on the call listening tonight who consider themselves masculine-identified female and who isn't interested in being touched? And if you want to share, press 1. Or do we have someone who is actually involved with someone who is masculine-identified and you are not able to touch that individual? Press 1 because we would love to hear from you. I do have, while we're waiting, I do have someone that posted in the group, and it was where she said that when she was young, everyone wanted to tell her who she was or who she wasn't, or who she should or shouldn't be attracted to. She said she felt like she left her mom's womb feeling as a lesbian, feminine and proud of it, and she would never take a backseat to that. She would not take a backseat to the evolve, whether it's the No Label Club or choose an identity sorority. And that was interesting. So thank you for sharing. I think that's a good thing when we are confident in who we are as a person and we're not allowing other people to tell us who we should or shouldn't be. And that even if it doesn't have to do with being a lesbian or gay, just period in life, like I was saying earlier, sometimes we have parents who want their kids to go into the family business, and they're like putting all this pressure on them to be a doctor, to be a lawyer, or to be a CEO. And some of these kids are like, you know, that's not what I want to do in life. I want to be able to make my own way. I want to identify with what I want to identify with, not what you want me to be or who you want me to be or how you want me to act or any of that. I don't want that. I want to just be me. What were you going to say? We have a caller, but what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just in agreement.
Oh, okay.
I was just in agreement about people being confident and empowered by who they are.
Definitely. Being confident, be confident, be empowered about who you are as a person, because you're the only expert on you. You're the only one that lives in this body 24 hours a day, every single day. No one else can tell you who you are. you have to know who you are for yourself and stick with it. So we have 8198. I'm going to bring this person on. 8198, you're on.
Hey, I had to leave and I came back to the line, and I had a comment about roles, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. I know that I have allowed myself to just be human, and not feel like I have to be a certain way during intimacy. And when I allowed myself to be that person, I was allowed. I discovered that I was able to be pleased and not just be a pleaser, you know, for, you know, lack of better, you know. So if a person is not connected with their bodies to be pleased by someone, I mean, that's okay, but don't let your role, whatever it is outside of the bed, dictate the pleasure that you can have with yourself and with somebody else in the bed. Now, masturbation and all that stuff like that, that's another subject. I mean, you know, many people can't find a way to please themselves. We're not talking about that. But we're talking about, you know, not feeling like just because you are identified as an aggressive person or a stud or whatever, it doesn't mean that you have to be disconnected from being a human, not less or more, but just being a human and being pleasured totally in, you know, vaginally or whatever, instead of just being a touch-me-not. Because I get that. You know, I do. People don't understand, but you can be a person that gets pleasure and not be touched. However, when I decided to not, for myself, when I decided to not be that person, it seemed to be a more complete union in the whole orgasm. Yeah.
So you're saying that you felt more connected when you allowed yourself to be who you are? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. More connected. I felt a level of, yeah, more connected with myself and with my partner. You know, yeah. But being a self-aggressive person, certainly I was thinking, oh, okay, if I allowed her to be a part of directly pleasing me, somehow she was going to see me as less of a person to protect her or less of a person that she love, and that wasn't the case at all.
So where did that, if you don't mind me asking, where did that feeling come from, that you would be seen as less than a person if you allowed her to please you?
Because when you're around aggressive women, it's like somewhat of a code. It's like, yo, you letting yourself scream instead of moan? You letting yourself throw your head back on the pillow instead of looking down at the pillow? What you going soft on me now? That's the stuff that I, you know, that I encounter. It's almost like if you do allow yourself to be that way in bed, you don't need to tell it to your soft, aggressive, or aggressive family.
Mm-hmm.
Because for some reason they kind of look at you as less of a, they just seem like they kind of look at you or see you in the light of someone that's not in control, and it has nothing to do with control. I'm not trying to be a man. You know, I'm chromosomally part, you know, person, a male to make me, but I'm not trying to be a man. I'm trying to be a human.
Right.
And for me, that means not allowing myself to be bound in the most free place that you're supposed to be, which is an intimacy.
Well, I like that you brought up the point that, you know, it's this supposed code out there among the masculine-identified women, I guess.
Yeah, or soft-aggressive.
Or soft-aggressive.
Yeah, because I'm not a stud. I'm not a masculine. And I don't know how to describe it.
Okay, we'll say soft aggressive.
Okay.
If that's what you would rather identify as, that's fine by me. So soft aggressive. Because I always say this, that whatever you do inside your bedroom is what you do inside your bedroom. I don't think it's something that needs to be discussed past you and your spouse in your bed, with your friends, with your family, whatever. Of course, we all have some things that we may want to share here and there with people, because that's just human nature. But for the most part, what you do in your bedroom is your business. It's who, that's your time. And it's supposed to be a sacred experience between you two. Even though I talk about sex and I talk about intimacy, but I'm not going to get inside your bed. You know, I don't want to get inside your bed. But I can give you tips. I can help things, help you with things to get better and tell you what may work and may not work. But as far as what you all do, that's what you do. I have no judgment on that. And that is how we all need to realize that it's not necessary to even share. So there's no need for a code, because there's nothing to share. As long as I'm being pleased, I'm pleasing my partner or whatever, that's about all that needs, and that doesn't even need to be known.
Right.
Not by anyone else outside of my partner. So I,
well,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me interject. Just sometimes when you're around your friends, when the boys get together, the girls get together, there is a dialogue that happens.
Well, of course.
There is a dialogue, you know, like a little clubhouse conversation. And sometimes it gets very intense, and sometimes it gets very intimate, and it gets very personal. And as the caller said, and I have been there, when people have been clowned or insulted because they haven't gone to the room or not. So it, you know, even though you would think that some things are very private, when you're with your close friends, sometimes those are the conversations that come up.
Well, yeah, I did definitely mention that you know, you do share, sometimes you do share certain things, but I think that some things are a bit private, and some things should remain sacred to your bedroom.
Exactly.
I don't need to know that, you know, I mean, other people don't need to know what I like, how I like it done, and all this kind of stuff. That doesn't need to be discussed outside the bedroom. And if you are discussing it, I think you owe each other that privacy and that respect not to discuss it. Not past, you know, oh, girl, it was good last night. You know, that type of stuff, okay, that's normal conversation. But when it goes deeper and you're talking about, well, I did this and she did that to me and I liked it and all that kind of stuff, sometimes I think it gets a little bit overboard. And that's when expectations come into play, and that's when you're made to feel bad about your decisions, and that's when you can't really be who you want to be, because you feel like you can't be, or you're wrong for doing or liking this certain thing.
What's also unfortunate, I'm sorry, were you finished? I'm sorry.
I am. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. What's also unfortunate is the expectation of however you identify yourself sometimes comes in the psyche in the bedroom. For example, like a lipstick lesbian. I don't even know what the fuck. I'm so tired of these names. Whatever you call a femme woman, right? Unfortunately, mm-hmm. those discussions or her expectation, sometimes it disallows her to take an aggressive role in that sacred place. To not just be one way. It's not just the aggressive or soft aggressive woman being free to enjoy the total part of making love. It's not just that. It's also the feminine woman that is held back from being involved with some things that could help the interaction be more fulfilling. It's almost like sometimes the aggressive woman has to kind of teach her, which is nothing wrong with teaching, but it can get frustrating, to teach her to be this person that she can be. She's just been also a victim of what she should be about in the bed. And it's just, I just wanted to say that. It's just, it can be challenging. With men and women, you know, okay, you know, things just are the way they are somewhat, but it's learning how to come out of the expectation of these role-playing. And like you were saying with the cooking, it's like, okay, you're the one that gets dirty at work and you're the one that goes to work with nails. It's okay if you come home and take the trash out with those nails on. It's okay for the person that's laying asphalt to crack an egg in the morning. It just be free. But these gender role playing thing just binds up so many comforts that I think could happen.
Right. I think it does. I think it limits what you can or what you feel you can and cannot do in your relationship, in your life, with who you want to be with. And when you're limited, I do think that it does place a certain strain on your relationships with even friends, family, loved ones, your intimate partner. But, you know, that's just my thoughts about it. So we thank you for sharing. Did you have any more thoughts before we let you go?
No, thank you for having me join in.
Okay, well, we appreciate you. We hope you continue to listen.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're actually, Renee, getting close to the end of our show tonight. Do you have anything that you wanted to add on to what she was saying?
No. This topic is so large that it's one of those things that you could take a component of it and continue to break down over the course of, you know, over months. I'm saddened sometimes that the perception of what a role or what a label or what someone should or should not do, whether in and out of the bedroom, can keep people in bondage to not being in healthy and fulfilling relationships. So it's my deepest prayer that even as we continue these conversations beyond this radio show, that we can begin to let go. I happened to log on real quick, and I know we were hearing it, and I saw a status by a minister, and she said something along the lines that said, some of our studs and masculine-identified lesbians should apologize to women for the chauvinistic and misogynistic ways in which you have treated them in the name of role-playing and imitating the trifling men you've had in your life. And, I mean, I would like to switch that because there's also some feminine women that have mistreated people in the name of being a femme or being that girl or that bee or whatever you want to. I've seen put on people have, you know, claimed. So I think that it's about being able to be open, that we can respect one another inside of whatever it is or however we do or do not identify ourselves.
Right. However we present ourselves, if we're able to respect people for who they are. And I love that minister said that, because eventually I'm going to do a topic on it's going to be more heterosexual based, but it's going to be about, you know, some of the things that heterosexual women, well, women period, were taught to be for a man, you know. And we're going to get into that topic on the G-Spot with Mika Ray, probably either in the month of November or December, because I think it's necessary to talk about, because as I said before, once we accept some type of role, it can be very debilitating to who we are as a person. And sometimes our needs are not being met because we're taught to be this way for a man or for a woman, you know. And so I really want to get deeper into that conversation, and I would love for us, Renee, when we come back, I do want us to continue to talk, of course, about labels, but like you said, it's such a broad spectrum to get into. We can talk about so much as it relates to labels. Go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing. I was saying,
Even if we get into the talk about like transgender relationships, or we just have so many things that we could talk about to cover this spectrum. So we will be informing you all of our next show, what the topic will be. It may be a part three or something within the gamut of labels. Make sure you join us on Saturday for Brunch in the Basement with Javon. I'm not sure who the special guest is, but you will see the invite. Of course, I will invite people to it. And that's from 11 to 1. And then on Sunday, we have Sunday Evening Shout with Javon. It's more of a gospel, spiritual-based type show. And then, of course, on Monday, I will be back with the G-Spot with Mika Ray. And we're discussing bisexual men and the down low phenom. So we'll be talking. I think I have two special guests that will be on with us that day. So it's going to be a really interesting topic. Look forward to the invite. Make sure you're following us on www.blogtalkradio.com/WJBR. Listen to our archive shows. You can find them on iTunes, or you can find them on the Blog Talk Radio page. And Renee, any final words before we go?
No, just stop by, and if you get a moment, stop by my website, ReneeAmin.com, or visit me on Facebook or Twitter at ReneeAmin.
I will post all those links in the invite for today, so you all will see those links. We appreciate you all for joining in, and I hope you all have a great, great night.
Good night.